The blue light's on. I'll call the House Committee on Healthcare to order and entertain a motion.
Open a work session.
Open a work session. That's right. And open a work session for the purpose of accepting some LCs as committee bills. Mr. Vice Chair?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I have a motion over here. Could I make it?
It would be so nice if you did, and I won't cry if you do either.
Thank you. I have had that effect on a couple of people today.
I've heard.
But today, right here, right now, I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 1185, dated 1-12-09, 1186, dated 1-20-09, LC 1189, dated 1-13-09, and LC 3089, dated 2-26-09, as well as CC?
LC.
LC 3304, dated 3-2-09.
Representative Harker moves the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 1185, 86, 1189, 3089, and 3304. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none? So moved.
Why is this room so empty?
Because we're not hearing 2009.
Because we don't have anything controversial.
It is.
Okay. I close the work session and I open a public hearing on HB 2581. Do we represent the rules with those?
He has rules, so he may not have been able to escape.
And HB 2632. Would you talk about those for a minute?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HB 2581 is transferring the administration of the Rural Health Services Program from the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to the Office of Rural Health, which is located in Oregon Health Sciences University. Sorry. It also amends the qualifying practice site definition to reference the Federal Rural Health Clinics Act of 1977 to bring us into compliance on that. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. House Bill 2632 is appropriating $3 million general fund monies per biennium to the Oregon Student Commission for Rural Health Loan Repayment Program. It declares an emergency and is effective January 1, 2009.
Cindy, do you know why 2581 has a subsequent referral?
I don't, Mr. Chair.
We're
not sure.
Scott, why don't you come on up and talk to us?
Yeah, and here are two. There's Representative
Good. Task Force.
Maybe you can answer the question. We heard you were tied up in rules.
I was. I got snuck away for a second. I have to go back as quickly as we can.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
You look familiar. Will you introduce yourself?
I would be glad to do that. Committee Chair and distinguished committee members, my name is Arnie Roblin. I am state representative from District 9. And we'll hope we're here talking about 2581.
And
2632.
Same time. Thank you very much for that. As I talked to you before, during the interim, our Rural Policy Committee took a Southern Oregon health tour. And one of the groups that helped set that up was the Rural Health, Department of Rural Health. And it was enlightening to go to the number of little hospitals, emergency preparedness groups around Southern Oregon, and to talk to them about issues that were of importance to them. And one of the issues that clearly spoke to us was the idea that having the ability in rural areas to help with some of the expenses from college tuition helped them in their recruiting process. Most of the doctors that came had much larger debt, but the idea that over a number of years, if they worked in these rural hospitals, they would be given a credit, coupled with many of the rural hospitals set up their own program to supplement that. And in fact, we found that a number of places were willing to find extra resources to help doctors come there, and they would ask that you pay the repayment plan over a number of years so that they stayed there, so they would stay there for up to 4 or 5 years. At the same time, in the discussions, it became clear that the current place where this fund is housed, OSAC, Oregon Student Assistance Program, this is a program that they're willing to do, but not one that necessarily goes exactly with their mission, which is to try to get access to colleges, to get people starting their time in college. And so when budget constraints happened, one of the programs which seemed to go there the quickest for a reduction of the money that was coming to their organization turned out to be this program. And from the perspective of the rural hospitals and doctors, this was a really important program. To their program, with respect to the number of people that it covered and all those other things, it wasn't that important to OSAC's mission. And so there was this conflict that was always happening. And as we kept having this conversation, it became clear that the best place to house this was in our rural health. I keep forgetting the name right now.
Office of Rural Health.
Office of Rural Health. Thank you very much. And so what you see before you in House Bill 2581 is that transfer. And then in 2632, I decided that we really needed to have an amount put there that would actually start saying that we had a significant investment. And I understand with today's economy how difficult this is going to be. But in states that have offered the same thing like Washington, even the $3 million that's put in this bill is very, very minor in comparison to what other states do in helping doctors in their repayment programs in rural areas. And so I thought we should at least have the discussion that the $3 million came up because proportionally it was closer to Washington than our $400,000 or less that we've tried to put there each session that this bill has been around. And I think that if we're really talking about over time getting doctors to these rural areas, we're going to have to come to grips with the ability for us to bring those people is going to be contingent on whether we have these programs. And the other thing that we can do is work towards finding outside sources and local hospitals and others that are willing to put money aside to do the same thing to supplement our program. So that's where this all comes from. And I look forward to answering any questions you might have.
Representative Roblin, are you the author of the Dash 1 amendments to it? Or did they come?
I do not believe that I was.
Okay, we'll see if we can find out who is. Do you have any idea why there's a subsequent referral on 2581?
I do not understand 25. I wrote them in such a way that they wouldn't need it because it's basically just the policy matter and the other one was the money matter. So I never understood why there would be a subsequent referral.
On both of them? Well, maybe.
On both of them.
Madam Administrator?
Yes, sir.
Will you check in when we're done with it? I mean, not today, but will you please check in and see why there's a subsequent referral in 2581? The money's in the other one. Although maybe just making sure it does move funds from one place to another, and maybe that's...
It does, and maybe that's the issue.
Maybe that's why it needs to go through. But if you would check in with them and ask them if they think it needs to be there. If not, we'll try and get it out. Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you. Just had a question of staff. I noticed in the summary or the background it says that it's loan repayment to physicians, and I wondered what are physicians defined as? Are they MDs? Because later on it says nursing assistants or, for example, naturopaths.
Scott, do you want to identify yourself and answer that question?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the director of the Oregon Office of Rural Health. This program covers MDs, DOs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, dentists, and pharmacists.
Not naturopaths.
Correct.
So they were just in my office lobbying for a similar privilege. Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions of Representative Roblin? Okay. Go back and save the state unless you have something else to say.
We had a few bills being introduced.
I understand that. We have already done it while you were waiting.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative, Would you consider a naturopathic addition, a friendly amendment, and would the rural health people?
I think it's going to be a bigger discussion. It's not that's not a big issue for me, but I think that will be a bigger discussion.
I think they have a separate bill, so that's fine by me. I just wanted to understand.
Telephones, everybody.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a
it
BlackBerry
might be mine,
ring.
So.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm trying to think about the amendment again. Thank you.
Tom, can I? Yes, go ahead.
All right. Thank you very much. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I'm here in support of House Bill 2581, which would move the program from the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, a state agency, to the Oregon Office of Rural Health, which, despite its name, is not a state agency. We are, in fact, a community service agency that's located at Oregon Health and Science University. While we just to explain a little bit of background for those of you less familiar with the Office of Rural Health, it was at one time a state agency, and in fact was located in Salem from 1979 to 1989. But the Omnibus Rural Health Bill that went through the legislature in 1989 did a number of things. It created this loan repayment program, and it moved the Office of Rural Health to OHSU, created the Rural Providers Income Tax Credit, and did several other things. So we've been at OHSU since 1989. At the time that this loan repayment program was created and placed at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, it really made quite a bit more sense. For one thing, I think there were 2.5 employees at the Office of Rural Health at the time, and OSAC not only had the staff but had similar programs and therefore the expertise to run a program like this. They had several loan programs at OSAC. They had even a collections department at OSAC, and it, like I said, made more sense. Today, they really don't have, with one exception, they really don't have any other programs that operate like this one. It's quite an oddity at that organization. And it also represents really a tiny fraction of their overall budget and is quite small in comparison to the other programs they operate. As a result, in the past when we've tried to make changes to the program or get the funding increased for the program, it really doesn't rise to the level of priority that we could really get anything accomplished. And so, as a result, this program is funded at the same level that it was when it was created in 1989, and that is $400,000 per biennium, which literally $200,000 a year. It's woefully underfunded. The program was created in 89. The first awards were made in 94. There are always people who are given loan repayment awards that ultimately decide to decline them. The people, the professions that are covered by this program are all highly coveted professions and specialties. You never know if they're going to get recruited to go somewhere else at the last minute. So the combination of the interest that is accrued on the money in the program, the fact that some loan repayment awards were set aside and then ultimately put back into the program, allows us currently to make anywhere from 4 to 6 or 7 awards per year. Last award cycle, which just happened in January, I believe, we were able to squeeze 4 people into this loan repayment program. So compare that with the need that no one needs to tell this committee about. It really, the impact is really quite minimal. I believe that the Oregon Office of Rural Health is an appropriate home for this program because we can dedicate the time and energy required to grow the program. I think it has the potential to become really much more of a public-private partnership. I have personally, in fact, spoken to foundations about the opportunity to grant funds to this program and to individual hospitals. The foundations seem to be a little bit nervous about giving grant monies to a state agency, and that's actually what started the idea of moving the program to the Office of Rural Health. They can then work with the OHSU Foundation, and hopefully it would pave the way, really, for some foundation investment in this program. Not to count my chickens before they hatch, though, I think that there are other reasons why this program would be a good fit for our office. We have a full-time recruiter on staff. We have a very active recruitment program. We can tie loan repayment to things like the students who go through the medical students who go through rural rotations through OHSU, now dental students that go through rural rotations. We can identify people that really have an interest and a stated interest in practicing in rural Oregon. As I mentioned earlier, no one really needs to tell this committee about the healthcare workforce shortage in the state and as in the nation as a whole. But I will mention that in addition to a shortage, there is also a misdistribution of the healthcare workforce. I always thought it was maldistribution, but, you know, spell check will tell you otherwise. So I'm going to call it So just for example, there is one physician for every 327 urban Oregonians. In rural Oregon, there's a physician for every 819. This program was developed to address the misdistribution of healthcare providers in rural Oregon compared to urban. As you can see, that difference in per capita ratio still exists today. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, the eligible professions are physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, pharmacists, and dentists. If a physician or pharmacist or dentist is awarded loan repayment through this program, they're required to work a minimum of 3 years in an eligible site and receive 20% of their award, up to a maximum of $100,000, by the way. Each year, they can then opt to do a fourth and a fifth year for another 20% each year for 100% of $100,000. Nurse practitioners and PAs, the timeline is a little shorter. They get 25% of their award over a four-year period of time, minimum 2 years, maximum 4 years. So in conclusion, I want to state for the record the Oregon Student Assistance Commission has really done an excellent job of implementing this program, and that's not at all the reason that this bill exists. We being the Office of Rural Health, however, would like to take it to the next level. We would like to grow it, we'd like to target it, and we'd like to make it work for more rural communities. So with that, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you about it today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I recommend you put maldistribution into your
thank you
into the dictionary of your spell check.
Thank you very much, because misdistribution is hard.
Are there any questions? Doug, you want to come up while... Oh.
I have one question.
Is Evan here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Not directly related, but just out of curiosity about the timing of the awards. I think you said they're made in January. Most of these assignments that folks come up with start July 1,
just came in.
Right? Is there any reason to think that, I mean, the percentage of people who accept them but don't complete the minimum obligation is pretty small in each case, 4 or 5%, but could it be shrunken even further if the timing were altered?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Harker, actually, the number of people historically through this program that are given awards and then ultimately decline them are larger than is represented there. The graphs that you see for the next bill and the testimony that was prepared for the next bill only shows those that signed the contract and began working in the obligated area. The reason that there's a high percentage is because until last legislative session, the window of obligated service was anywhere in that 5 years, for example. So the clock started ticking, and they had up to 2 years to actually land in a qualifying community and begin practicing. And during that 2 years, an awful lot of people fell out. Last year, we got the statute changed so that the minimum obligated service is at the beginning of that window of time, and we aren't seeing the same phenomenon.
Okay.
Hope that answered your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, Dr. Salino. Mr. Barber.
Thank you.
Your order.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I'm Doug Barber here today on behalf of the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians. We are strongly in support of both bills. We've worked closely with Scott and Representative Roblin to bring these to you today. We see this as a small step that you can take to help support primary care workforce in rural areas, which we think will be essential as we move down the path toward universal access in Oregon. I think When I look at what's happened in Massachusetts, it's very instructive, both on the success and the challenge side that they have faced. There, as people are newly insured, and they have now over 400,000 newly insured, it often takes people weeks to find a physician, months to get appointments. There was a story in the Boston Globe just last fall. A newly insured gentleman called his physician, had a physician, called to because he wanted to get a physical, hadn't had one in years. And they said, sure, we're scheduling 18 months out. So I mean, that, it's like all of you scheduling for next session now, you know.
I think I am.
I've noticed. There are many of the primary care physicians are overwhelmed with new patients. The last statistic I saw out of Massachusetts, 42% of the internists have closed their practice to new patients. They can't take them. Part of that is just that there are more and more uninsured than Massachusetts even thought. Here, within the Academy of Family Physicians, we hear similar kinds of stories. There was a case last summer. One of our physicians moved to Sisters to set up a new practice. And within the first 2 weeks of opening his office, he got a phone call from a realtor who said that he had was selling a house to a couple, and as part of the earnest money agreement for the house, they would only buy the house if they could find a physician, primary care physician, who would take Medicare. Would this doctor take Medicare?
Smart people.
Smart buyers, but it's just indicative of the challenges of finding primary care physicians, especially in rural areas. How is Massachusetts addressing this issue? Well, in some of the same ways that we're proposing in this legislation. They have a loan repayment program. In fact, 2 years ago, they received a $5 million grant from Bank of America to help fund their loan repayment program. Now, I'm not sure, given the current economy, I'm not sure Bank of America is the first place we're going to go look, but there are, at least in some places, opportunities out there. The state also has a $2 million a year program that they use to help repay loans for doctors who agree to work in community health centers or primary care in underserved areas. They also waive tuition and fees for medical students who agree to work as primary care doctors in Massachusetts for 4 years after finishing their training. Kind of incentives that help move people into primary care. Last week we had family physicians here in the building. One of the students who was there, I believe, introduced himself as a second-year student who now has $183,000 in loans. And you know, we're asking students like that to choose family practice over a specialty, knowing what that income differential is, and then choose a rural family practice over an urban family practice, again with that income differential. So programs like loan repayment really do make a difference. In your materials today, there is written testimony from one of our members, Dr. Nick Gideons. He was he practiced in Cottage Grove for 8 years, received some type of private loan repayment assistance that helped him afford to do that. He's currently a member of the Oregon Scholarship Assistance Commission's Rural Health Services Review Committee, so he's on the panel that helps look at these applications, and he writes annually, we have many more qualified candidates and communities than we can fund at current levels, and there would be real advantages to relocating the program at the Office of Rural Health. So, with that, I strongly encourage your support for both of these bills, and with me is another of our physicians.
Sure.
Hi.
Questions of Mr. Barber?
Oh.
Hi, Evan. Welcome.
Hi there. Evan Salino, also with the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians. Thanks for hearing the testimony. I would just kind of echo what Doug said. you know, physicians in rural communities are the backbone of those communities, both economically and obviously for the healthcare of those communities. And this is a small investment in a pretty quick action fix for the short term, trying to get more providers into rural areas. You know, we have to do other things. We have to, you know, work on the education of folks and get people into the pipeline and change the delivery system and cover more people and all that sort of thing. But this is definitely part of that bigger picture. And, again, you know, these folks are really at the front lines of what's going on in healthcare. More and more of their patients are uninsured. They're having a harder time making it in general. So again, you know, asking people to choose to go to rural areas, to choose primary care in general, something like a loan repayment certainly can bring people in and get people to move from other areas of the country to a place where that is really considered, you know, sort of cutting edge in terms of primary care, which is Oregon. And then I think also, you know, moving the program to the Office of Rural Health makes a lot of sense in terms of just the administration and advocacy for the program in general.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
You just sitting there? Are you gonna?
Yes.
Go for it.
All right, Mr. Chair. Then I would like to offer testimony. Pardon me.
Yeah. No.
For House Bill 2632 as well, and that is of course the bill that would increase funding for the Rural Services Loan Payment Program. As I mentioned in my earlier testimony, the level of funding for the program is the same as it was when it was created in 1989. And I wanted to point out that the average physician who graduates from OHSU has $170,000 in student loan debt. That's the average. So some people have less, and quite a few have substantially more. Dentists are about the same at $167,000 in debt. The small subset of new grads who want to practice in a rural community must balance the corresponding lower income potential in a rural community with their need to pay off their student loans. A loan repayment award of up to $100,000 makes it possible for those professionals to choose what would otherwise be an economically risky practice location. Plenty of other states, most notably our neighbors to the north in Washington states, have robust and well-funded programs that are poised and ready to lure our potential new recruits away. And I can tell you that having an in-house recruitment program in the Office of Rural Health, we run into that quite frequently. Physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, pharmacists, and dentists are all eligible for this program. Awardees must practice a minimum of 2 years or 3 years, depending on the profession. And the maximum they can get through the program is $100,000. To be honest, our promotion of this program is relatively limited because we have so little money to give away in the form of awards. Even so, the applications range in numbers from the low 20s to over 70. So if we did have more money for the program, we could easily make awards to very deserving people. And we've just estimated that it could be anywhere from 15 to 30 new desperately needed healthcare providers per year. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we were able to make 4 awards during the last award cycle. That means one of those 5 eligible professions did not were not able to receive benefit through the program.
Okay. Well, there's something else there, Doug?
Just an issue around that. There is an amendment to 2581.
Is that the dash ones?
It is the dash ones.
And those were your amendments?
They're actually Scott's.
Actually, we OHSU has submitted those, and the primary purpose for these amendments is that the bill, when it came out of legislative council, specified that the employee literally had to be transferred from OSAC to the Office of Rural Health. And so that's the purpose, particularly since this is about a 0.25 FTE to run this program. If I might, Mr. Chair, there's one more point I'd like to make.
Okay.
I've heard from some of your colleagues that loan repayment might not be the best solution. There is no one solution, but might not be a good solution for the healthcare workforce shortage and maldistribution, because the recipients come, do their mandatory time, and then leave. And I'd just like to offer some evidence. I think that might be more true for the federal loan repayment program through the National Health Service Corps. The reason for that is that with the federal program, you really have to look across the entire United States to see where you want to go as a loan repayment recipient. The money is tied to sites, and so you then interview at these various sites and choose where you want to go practice. Well, if you want to be in Oregon, oftentimes there are very, very few opportunities with the federal program. They're all in Arkansas and Virginia and other parts of the country. So if you're uprooted and sent to a part of the country that you don't envision living in for the rest of your life, it makes sense that you're going to leave after your minimum mandatory practice obligation. With the state loan repayment program that we're talking about today, our track record is really very different. And so in the third page of your testimony where there are graphs, it shows that for the recipients since 1994, for physicians, for example, well over half, and in fact it's about 70-some percent, I believe. Can't find it. Oh, here it is. 77% have remained beyond their obligated period of service. Of the nurse practitioners and PAs, 53% have stayed beyond their minimum obligation. I don't have similar statistics for for pharmacists and dentists, because they were added to the program too recently to really have any long-term data. And I just also want to make the point in conclusion that, you know, having a physician, a pharmacist, a dentist in a needy rural community for 3 years or 5 years, and then they leave, is better than not having them there at all. What we're finding is that healthcare professionals, physicians, et cetera, are moving around from one job to another. They're just as mobile as any other profession in the country, and so I'm not sure that we can really expect a lifetime commitment. In fact, I'm certain we can't expect a lifetime commitment anymore.
Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Several members of this committee had the opportunity to go to Grants Pass last week and heard from the horse's mouth, so to speak, of challenges of recruiting and retaining physicians there. And so, since the representative from that district, I think, is not in this room, I thought I'd share that we understand quite well now the needs to do that. And want to ask you why there are so few Oregon sites on the national list. Do you have any insight into that?
I do.
Could we ramp that up a bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Harker, the federal program is structured such that with whatever monies are budgeted, that determines how many slots there are throughout the country. And then you have to measure level of underservice in all those spots around the country. And frankly, when you're looking at degrees of underservice, Oregon is not nearly as underserved as Appalachia and some other parts of the country, North Dakota, things like that. So,
okay,
that's the reason.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Garrett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious about whether we impose, are there other requirements imposed on the recipients other than their agreement to serve in rural areas? Do we require certain fields? Do we give preference to certain fields? Are there, or, you know, you must accept Medicare, that type of requirement?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Garrett, they must practice 32 clinical hours a week in the community. They must not only be in a rural community, but an underserved rural community. Our office comes out with a designation annually called the Areas of Unmet Healthcare Need, and we rank them on 5 different criteria. Every primary care, so they must be in a primary care specialty as well. All the primary care service areas are ranked from highest to lowest, representing degree of underservice. We draw a line in the middle at 50%, and everything below is considered an area of unmet health care need. They must go to one of those communities. However, there are no requirements that they see a certain percentage of Medicare or Medicaid.
Okay, well, oh, I'm sorry. That's it. You did it. So now you talk after you go.
I'm there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Primary care physicians only. We heard
from one of the 8 neurologists in Southern Oregon that 5 of them were approaching retirement age rapidly, and they don't know what they're going to do.
Representative Harker, that requirement is part of the regulation, not the statute, and so it's in ORS. Should the program be moved to the Office of Rural Health?
In OAR?
Excuse me, yes. In the OARs, not the ORSs. I believe it's time to remove that restriction because, again, at the time that this program was created, primary care was where all the shortages were. And now we have equally great needs for general surgeons, for psychiatrists, for emergency room physicians. The need is so great for all of them, it's really impossible to rank one as being more needed than another.
Aren't general surgeons primary care?
They're not considered primary care by most definitions.
That's interesting. Okay, well, here's what
Mr.
I intend.
Chair, yeah. Can I just ask?
Yeah.
Just to go back to that question that Representative Kenemer raised about the naturopathic doctors. So they are not covered by this program? Is that right?
That's correct. They are not.
And the reason for that is that generally, are they generally not covered by programs like this?
I think typically they are not. The only reason they're not included in this program is simply because they were not part of the original law that was passed, nor have they been added in subsequent sessions.
Yes, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, Scott. Do we know how much Washington State is investing in these kind of loan repayment programs for rural areas?
Representative Kotek, last time I checked with my friends in Washington, the state was contributing $9 million to their program.
What I intended to do with this is we'll move 2581 as soon as we hear from LFO whether or not they may want to see it anyway because it's a transfer of funds. But if they don't, then we'll move it to the floor. And we'll hold 2632 for a bit later in the session. We'll stay in close communication with the co-chair of the Human Services Subcommittee.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, we have to probably talk about this because I'm guessing because currently the money's in OSAC, this might go to House Ed, or it might go to the Ed Subcommittee and not ours.
Well, the transfer might.
Well,
I mean, is that the...
Not the transfer, well, both, actually. Because both OHSU and OSAC are not handled by my subcommittee.
Well, I was assuming we can move 2581 as soon as we hear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And then wait till we've moved that, because there's no opposition to it. If we just figure out why it's got ways and means, and then we can put... We've been told that we have to put things in a priority list here, so we'll keep this and see how it compares to other things we have. But, Scott, thank you for being here. Evan, Doug, you're here all the time.
Thank you.
And, we will close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let me just comment while everybody's here. Wednesday at the 3 to 5 session, we're changing the agenda. We're going to continue the discussions we had on Friday, and we'll be in room 50. Room 50, that's right. We had a lot of problems because the hearing we had wasn't televised and it was a packed house. The fire marshal had locked us out. And there was howls of anguish from people who couldn't watch us agonize directly and in person. So Wednesday, the agenda's changed. You would have gotten a new agenda. And we'll continue the discussions right where we left off on.
Mr. Chair, you may have announced this at the beginning of the meeting on Friday. I wasn't there at the beginning, but is the idea with the room change just to have everybody facing each other for... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay,
I think
it's a good
it's
idea.
It's really hard to have real talk in this kind of setting. Yeah, that's exactly the reason.
And 50 will be set up that way also.
Great. Representative Nolan started it in land use, and I hate 50 as a place, but she set it up that way, and it worked, I thought, really, really well to be in that kind of... And I thought it worked pretty well for us on Friday, so... I think we can get through the rest of it. We also have between 25 and more proposed amendments to get to after we deal with that set of amendments, and I think we'll take testimony on that. We can hear those here.
Can I ask a follow-up question to the chair?
Please.
Not that I'm necessarily pushing for this, nor am I advocating against it, but is it the chair's intent to add hours onto our normally scheduled hours? Just my sense is, and I think a few of our senses, that 2009 is so big, and I thought the time on Friday was great, but how much time we spent and how far we got, you start going, wow, there's not enough hours in the session.
Yeah, I think we're going to probably have to plan on a couple of evening sessions at least during this month, and we'll check all the schedules and see what works. A long session would be, I think, very useful to. And with all the amendments, we're going to get a lot of testimony, I think, on each of them. So we'll. Okay, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2610. And Tom Powers, will you come and tell us where we got? Sandy, will you just give us a brief description of it?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2610 broadens the category of healthcare professionals who may use the title doctor under certain requirements, and as I have the microphone, I'd like to acknowledge written testimony that everybody should have from that we got via email from Thomas and Watson in favor of the bill, and we'd like to enter that into the record.
From who?
Thomas and Watson, who's a physical therapist.
Great.
I emailed it to you, but we...
Oh, emailed.
Oh, you emailed it to us.
Okay. Did we not put hard copies out?
No,
okay.
You. Good.
Yeah, your staff should have it, I think. I got mine just before I left my office.
You're good.
Tom, you want to just guide us as to why we're here, and then we have some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Tom Powers, Representative Greenlick's Legislative Director, House District 33. Just kicking off House Bill 2610, which I believe is relating to healthcare professionals. It gets into the statutes that govern the use of the title doctor, and as we'll find out, some other words like clinic and institute, but primarily the word doctor. And this series of statutes, which is ORS 676.110 and 677.060 are the two primary places that this is governed, health professions generally, and also in the medical board statutes, things that govern the practice of medicine. This is kind of a bill that is a response to dueling opinions we got from legislative counsel as well as the Department of Justice regarding, in particular, the use of the term doctor for physical therapists who had earned a doctorate of physical therapy, but who, by their board, were forbidden to use the title doctor because originally we thought it violated 676.110, but in fact, according to a memorandum generated by Carol Parks of the Department of Justice, violates the practice of medicine under 677.060. So what we decided to do, Representative Greenlick and I, is figure out how we can come up with a policy that would clear up the kind of ambiguous statutes that we have in the books that carve out each of the specific professions that can call themselves doctor and come up with one clear way to determine who in a health profession may call themselves doctor in the course of their practice. And 2610 basically does this by amending first section, the first section of 676, by basically saying you need to have a doctoral degree in the field in which you practice, and you also have to be licensed by the particular board that manages that practice. So that basically means if you're a chiropractic physician and you have a doctor of chiropractic and you're licensed by the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, you may call yourself a Dr. Tom Powers, D.C., or something like that, Doctor of Chiropractic. Additionally, this would also allow a physical therapist who has a doctor of physical therapy to come before a patient or advertise as Dr. Tom Powers, DPT, Doctor of Physical Therapy. That's currently not allowed, and I think some other examples of where we have doctoral degrees, but are not included in the current statutes on the books are physical therapists, as I mentioned, occupational therapists, which is a newer degree, speech-language pathologists. I think audiologists sort of have a doctoral degree, but not in audiology in particular. And veterinarians are included in 676.110, but not in the counterpart statute 677.060. So this clears up a big mess of statutes that we have, two that appear to be in conflict, by coming up with a single policy that says if you have a doctoral degree in your field and you're a licensed practitioner by the board in which you earned your degree, then you can call yourself a doctor. We also have submitted to the committee a -1 amendment to this bill that carries forward some policy choices made by previous legislatures about the use of the term physician for practitioners that do not have a medical degree or a doctor of osteopathy, chiropractic physician, naturopathic physician, and optometric physician have all been added since the creation of these statutes. And it was not included in the original bill. However, the -1s would carry those forward into the future statute. And I'm happy to take any questions about this, but I think we have a number of people signed up to testify after myself.
And in the last session, we added one to that long list, which has 12 or 14 in it. We added Doctor of Oriental Medicine. But we did not add, we had a bill in front of us on Doctor of Physical Therapy, and we ended up not adding that. Is that so? I mean, it just struck us as we debated last time how stupid it was to have this long list, and you have to get on this list if you have an earned degree, and it just seemed a little odd. Dr. Kenemer.
That's of which I speak, actually. I was contacted, thank you, Mr. Chairman, contacted by Chief of Psychology at the State Hospital. In the practice of psychology, we have postdoctoral residency required as a prerequisite for licensure. Typically, you've earned your degree. Typically, you must, in order to be postdoctoral, you've earned your degree. So, ordinarily, you're addressed as Dr. Kenemer, resident. That's your title. You're not allowed to call yourself a psychologist because you're not licensed by the Board of Psychology at this point, because you cannot be. And incidentally, I did 2 years of predoctoral residencies in which I couldn't use that title. But it seems to me that obviates the use of a title that currently is allowed under the statutes of the psychologist. I wonder, is there an exemption or how does this work?
Representative Greenlink, Representative Kenemer, if you are a resident under this bill, if you are not currently licensed by the Board of Psychological Examiners, you would not be entitled under this proposed amendment to Section 676.110 to call yourself a doctor because you would not, in fact, be licensed. However, the Board of Psychological Examiners may have some other form of licensing when you're going about applying for your full license, pursuing the after you come up with, well, basically when you're trying to go for your full practice. I don't know if there's something in between when you graduate and when you are a full licensee where you would have some sort of provisional license by the board, which would entitle you to call yourself doctor under this bill.
You can still use it as I do when you're making a restaurant reservation.
Yeah, I just see this as a problem, although I see the psychology lobbyist is here, so maybe we'll hear.
Well, we can hear about it.
Good.
Yeah. Representative Harper.
Dr. Chairman?
That's right, Dr. Thank
Dr. Representative?
Not sure.
You can't practice anything. Mm. So if you're safe.
I guess I'll just leave. take the theoretical case of someone who has a PhD in a medically aligned science who serves on the faculty at a medical university and is in the public and directs labs and serves on various committees at the institution. Can that person be referred to as Dr. Greenlink, Harker, other?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dr. Harker,
Dr. Chairman, that
the leadership of this committee are all doctors, albeit not in the healthcare profession. It would depend on whether that person is talking or is practicing in a healthcare profession or not. So if that person is seeing patients or going about any of the things that would be found in the Practice Act of any of the things we have on the statute, so psychology practice, medical practice, et cetera, then that would not be allowed under the law, the proposed law here. However, if they were calling themselves doctor in a setting that did not involve the practice of medicine or the practice of psychology or a healthcare profession generally that is not regulated by the state, then I think, according to opinion we got from Counsel Charlie Cheek, you can pretty much use the title doctor if you have an earned doctoral degree that complies with the accreditation statutes, an ORS 348.609. You can call yourself doctor pretty much whenever you want if it's unrelated to the practice of healthcare regarding this law. There may be other laws that govern that.
At the National Institutes of Health, I'm Dr. Harker. When I was at OHSU interacting with patients, I was Dr. Harker. But would I no longer be able to be Dr. Harker under this?
No, you will as long as it's not in the context of a clinical practice. I practice population medicine as the chair of public health preventive medicine, so, but there's no licensing board on that, so it was safe for me.
Yeah, there's no licensing board. Well, we had a case where a PhD was passing himself off as an MD. That was malfeasance. However, he was a doctor. He was interacting with patients on a very regular basis. But he could not be Dr. X under these criteria.
That's right, because he was practicing a profession that was licensed. And he couldn't use it in that context without a license.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Parker, another question would be how much of that would have been allowed under or is allowed currently under the current statute. It's pretty ambiguous to tell who may call themselves doctor at this point, which is one of the key reasons that Representative Greenlich decided to bring this bill forward. We have kind of a description of who may call themselves doctors, but then we have nine sections, which according to legislative counsel are kind of non-binding. Like if you happen to be a podiatrist, then you shall call yourself a podiatric physician, MD, or something like that, or whatever the degree is.
Not MD.
Yeah, I got that one wrong. The acronym's a little hard. But the question is, basically, we're making this a broader definition of who may call themselves doctor by removing those ambiguous carve-outs and applying a broad policy. If you will have a doctoral degree and your license in your field, and the doctoral degree is in that field, then you're good to go.
Representative Maurer?
Thank you. So let's say you had a nurse practitioner who owned, say, a clinic that was called Health Clinic. And this nurse practitioner had owned such said clinic for, say, multiple years. Would passage of this bill prohibit such said nurse practitioner from using the term of which she had had for 7+ years?
It would force her to go back to medical school.
Well, she already is. So. As I read the bill, yeah, I think...
Did we add that to it? I mean, did we confuse that issue, who can use clinic by doing this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Maurer, it seems pretty hypothetical right now, but I might want to clarify that. But I think the question is, again, whether this changes current law, because under 676, we have the definition of clinic in here, saying that if you are practicing a healthcare profession using the title doctor or clinic institute specialist in conjunction with the name of your business, so if you had, for example, Rogue River Health Clinic, you had to print out that you were either a podiatrist, a chiropractor, a dentist, a naturopath, an optometrist, a doctor of an osteopath, or a doctor of medicine, physician, veterinarian, or newly created acupuncturist or doctor of oriental medicine. So we have these nine allowances for what you can have in your name, clarifying the use of clinic, and nurse practitioner isn't in here. Under this bill, if said nurse practitioner were to earn a doctorate in the practice of nursing, they would be able to do that. But that brings up the idea of the word clinic. It seems to be hanging here, unrelated to the use of the word doctor. That would be another policy choice we might be able to make with institute. How do we want to define institute? Is an institute something that only doctors work at, or something that must necessarily have a doctor, and same with the clinic?
Yeah, I think this might be the right opportunity to clarify that question. I mean, for example, there's the North Portland Nurse Practitioner Clinic. Clearly, that wouldn't be a violation of anything, I would assume, since it says it's a nurse practitioner clinic. But if that's not allowed by the by either the current statute or the amended statute, I think we need to make sure it is.
Yeah, I guess my question is, under current law, forget the bill, under current law, you're questioning whether the use of the word clinic is legal today, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Maurer, I think that's correct. At the very least, I think it's equal between the two proposed, or current law and this proposal, HB 2610. The statute 676110 is written, I don't want to say poorly, but so weirdly that it's hard to interpret exactly which professions that are not listed in this category of nine, what to do with those in terms of doctor or clinic or institute or specialist. And that's pretty much what legislative counsel said in the opinion dated March 25th, 2008. And I have plenty of copies of those in the DOJ opinion if the committee would like to see them.
I think that would be useful to distribute them. Yeah, I think if it is this way, and we'll talk to LC, we ought to clarify on a policy basis what we want. I mean, does that mean we only want people with doctor degrees to be able to use clinic, or does it mean we want somebody else to be able to use clinic, or does it mean anybody can use clinic even though they're not? I mean, I think that's ambiguity that's worth clarifying, I think. Okay, let's hear some testimony. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you.
Let's have Richard Rutt. Right? Is that right? R-U-T-T? Good. Robert Lindblatt? I'm sorry. Lundblatt, yeah, that looks like an A. And an old favorite, Wayne Schumacher. There you are.
Chair Greenlich and members of the committee, my name is Richard Rutt. I'm the director of the School of Physical Therapy at Pacific University, and I'm here to support this bill. It will allow our students to enjoy the rights and privileges of the degree that they have attained at Pacific University, and would bring us in line with the other clinical degrees that we offer at the university, namely, the School of Optometry, or the College of Optometry, where we have the OD degree, and then the psychology school, the professional psychology, where the PsyD is the degree granted. And so I would strongly support this legislation, and thank you for bringing it and trying to clarify this for us. Also, in light of this discussion, I do not have a DPT degree. My degree is a PhD, so I do not call myself doctor in the clinical setting because I don't have the DPT, and just introduce myself as Richard. Thanks.
You have a physical therapy degree, though.
I do have a physical therapy degree, but it's not the DPT. Mine was the master's degree at the time, and then I got a PhD. So it's not mine is not a clinical degree as far as the PhD goes. So I choose, and I think rightly so, not to call myself doctor in a clinical setting.
Mr. That's really the crux of the whole issue, is people misrepresenting who they are. And I think your your approach is exactly what we would want people to do, and maybe I think that's really where the law needs to be, is people represent, in fact, who they are.
Right.
I think that's exactly right.
Mr. Kenneman?
You mentioned in... Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I suppose the only one in this context that's entitled to use doctor is Representative Garrett.
In this context,
yeah, in the context of legislation, yeah. As a juris doctor, he would. This is your clinical practice we're in, right?
I've never had the audacity to call myself a doctor, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Doctor, Professor, Analyst, whatever. I guess I want to go back and question your testimony. You mentioned on behalf of your PsyD program in psychology. My best guess is they're going to want a postdoc residency to be able resident to be able to use that. Could you check on that, or do you know that for a fact?
Chair Greenlake and Representative Kinnemeyer, that is correct. They are different from us in that I think typically to even following the medical school model, that they have a residency following their degree before they would complete the requirements for their degree and be able to sit for licensure examination. In our program, it is somewhat different. Once they have completed our program and done the clinical requirements, then they take the national examination and become full physical therapists. So we don't have a residency-type program following graduation.
I may have misunderstood you. I thought you said that the that would also support your PsyD program.
No,
I'm quite sure they would take deference with this bill.
No, they in fact do have a residency program following their didactic program.
I was thinking about the residency programs at the medical school or a hospital, and I think they have a special kind of license during that residency program, but I'm not sure about that. I don't see anybody from OHSU. Okay. Thank you very much.
Representative Greenick and the rest of the committee, my name is Robert Lundblad. I'm a psychologist. I've got a degree in clinical psychology, the PsyD, from George Fox University. I'm licensed with the state of Oregon, so I can call myself a psychologist. And also, I hold a position as a clinical psychologist, too, at the Oregon State Hospital, as well as having a private practice here in town. And I'm here representing the Oregon Psychological Association in kind of a watchful, neutral position. I think that they are interested in any legislation that's going to promote clarity, understanding, and openness to the public. They don't, at the same time, I think there's this minor concern brought up by a committee member that there's one kind of category of doctors in psychology that aren't yet licensed. It's kind of a unique position where person like myself would graduate from George Fox in 2002 and I would have my doctorate conferred on me, and then thereafter I would have to practice under a contract with a licensed psychologist to deliver services. And I'd have to call myself, during that period, a psychologist resident. So anytime I'd have to introduce myself to a resident, to a patient, resident at the hospital, or to a patient or client, I'd have to say I'm a psychologist resident. And I think that's one part of the practice of psychology that is kind of drilled into us, is that we're supposed to represent ourselves correctly in our areas of competency and specialty. I'd be open to answer any questions you might have about that matter or about the practice of psychology as it pertains to this.
Is psychology not in the current list of authorized doctors?
I couldn't find it.
Okay. So you're not entitled to use it now.
I use it, you know, and I'm privileged at the Oregon State Hospital.
I think folks that are not on the current list and that...
Well, it's covered in our statute under psychologist licensing.
At that place.
Yes, it's cited there.
Well, and this wouldn't change that. So if it was cited there, under whatever circumstances it's cited there, it would remain.
Yeah, this, but I don't know about, I think there's a discrepancy, and I don't remember, there was some work done on the residency requirement, and I don't know. I know a number of years ago when I supervised residents, they typically called themselves Dr. X, but then they always had to call themselves a psychology resident. They were not a psychologist, and they had to be very clear in working with people or in any effort to identify themselves professionally that they were Dr. X, a psychology resident, not a psychologist, until they were licensed by the board.
We'll have that the next time.
Yeah.
We have it here. Thank you.
Okay.
Wayne?
Thank you. Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, my name is Wayne Schumacher. I'm the executive director of the Optometric Physicians Association, and I'm pleased to come here today to indicate that we're in full support of the language in 2610, as we think it does properly broaden the term and define who can use the term doctor. I think inadvertently in cleaning up the language and trying to straighten this out, as Mr. Powers had pointed out, the Dash 1 amendments show that what had happened was is that they had removed the ability for a number of providers to use specific terms, particularly in our case, optometric physicians. And the Dash 1 amendments essentially reinstate that. So we would urge your support for the Dash 1 amendments and our support for 2610. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, in drafting this, we had no intention of taking anything away that is currently available.
And we appreciate the chair's cooperation on the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay, great, Wayne. Can we have Eric Frederick, Inga Decker, and I can't read this. Diana Goodwin?
Correct.
Yeah, Diana Goodwin.
You could read it.
I could after all. Go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I'm Eric Frederick. I'm representing audiology with Providence Milwaukee Hospital. And I'd like to confirm one of the things that was said earlier, which is audiology does, in fact, have a clinical doctorate degree, which is the entry-level requirement for a new graduate these days. So in the state of Oregon, I, as an audiologist, am required to have two things to see patients, a doctoral degree and a state license. I support this bill that's under consideration because the situation we have right now with the current law represents a consumer protection dilemma. There are two types of professionals who tend to deal with patients with hearing loss. There are audiologists and there are hearing instrument specialists. And the training requirement is very different. And many other healthcare professions share this same dilemma. In audiology, we have doctoral-level audiologists who are performing some of the same functions as hearing instrument specialists who have no required university training. The public doesn't know how to differentiate who they're seeing or what they're seeing. And it's the current law as written makes it very difficult to explain to a patient the qualifications of the person seeing them, so much so that in some instances it's been interpreted that the audiologist may not have their degree on the wall because it purports that they are in fact a doctor of audiology. The limitations of our current law also extend to physical therapists as trying to differentiate themselves with athletic trainers, obviously, many other situations, psychologists and counselors. But my primary concern is for the consumer protection, being able to have the general public understand who they're seeing and what their qualifications are. I feel the new bill that's under consideration right now very elegantly tries to improve that situation. There are certainly some shortcomings that you all have expressed. But as it stands now, I fully support the language in House Bill 2610.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Diana Godwin. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland, and I specialize in representing independent practice physical therapy clinics. I presently represent about 125 of them here in Oregon and 145 in Washington. I'm also a member of the Washington State Bar. And I've practiced as an attorney on behalf of physical therapists now for about 25 years, a number of years here at the legislature as well. And I am currently the attorney for a physical therapist who is presently facing disciplinary action by the Physical Therapist Licensing Board because a Willamette Falls hospital that was putting on a seminar on pain management asked my client to speak. My client has a doctoral of physical therapy degree, and in the brochure that Willamette Falls Hospital put out, they first identified him as John Jones, not his real name, DPT, which is correct, physical therapist, and he has a number of other specialist degrees. But in page 2 or 3 of the body in the text, they said, we're pleased to have Dr. so-and-so addressing us on this topic. Now, the audience for that pain management seminar were other professionals, principally physical therapists. But my client is facing disciplinary proceedings. We are presently in the in a contested case hearing before a hearings officer at the Office of Administrative Hearings. And that's because this statute, ORS 676110, is written very ambiguously, as we all know, but presently what it says is if you are practicing a healthcare profession or you use the title doctor or any contraction thereof or the word clinic or institute, you shall identify yourself by the type of specialty that you practice. However, this statute has been interpreted to mean that unless you are on that list, you are prohibited from using a degree that you have earned. Even though it's not deceptive, it doesn't harm the public. In fact, may well better inform the public. And so the licensing board has taken the position that if you're not on this list, we're going to say that it is an unethical, unprofessional, and consumer deceptive practice for you to use a degree that you've earned. So I think it's time to do this. I actually wanted to follow up on Representative Kenemer's point. The way I read the current statute, 676110, which is this general statute, psychologists are not on that enumerated list. And I agree that the specific statutes governing licensure of psychologists may allow for that, but this is the general bill that's, and it's being interpreted by some licensing board to say if you're not on this list, you can't use the word doctor in front of your name, notwithstanding that you're practicing. Although I don't know whether, I think psychology is a healthcare profession, but you're not on this list. And I think that's a concern. I also am concerned about the present statute that you can't use the word clinic unless you're on this list. A number of my clients use the word XYZ Physical Therapy Clinic, Tualatin Valley Physical Therapy Clinic. You've seen it. We've all seen it. And they're not on this list. So can they not even use the word clinic? This statute really does need to be addressed, and I applaud the committee, and I will work with the committee on this. I've done a lot of statutory and administrative rule drafting, and I'd be happy to work at any time if I can help on that. So with that, thank you.
Is it one expects laws to be carried out with a little common sense? What happened with that case? I mean, that's really crazy.
Well,
something else was going on.
And I must say, I mean, I know that I work a lot with the Physical Therapist Licensing Board, and they had every intention to do what they felt was right and to be in compliance with the legislature, and they felt that the legislature, through this statute, had made a policy decision that only the enumerated people on this list could use that word. So it was their position that if they weren't on the list, the Physical Therapist Licensing Board didn't want to countermand what they felt was perhaps a policy decision by the legislature, and they didn't want physical therapists to use the word doctor, even though they'd earned the degree, because they didn't want to run afoul of the statute.
Yeah, and it got confused by the fact that there was a proposal to include them on the list during the 2007 session.
Yeah, and the fact that it was not...
That proposal got backed off, so it must have made them think...
And actually, it's interesting. I think that the board feels that the fact that there is this bill now means that they were correct in the way they interpreted the other statute. I'm not sure. I mean, that's we're lawyers arguing about this with. That's what we do.
Any other,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just, you know, I don't want to say in defense of the physical therapy board, but they were clearly responding to the advice they received from
absolutely
the state's general counsel.
Absolutely.
So, which is
absolutely.
This
and acting in good faith.
And this letter was on the specific case. They redacted, is that the term? Undacted, whatever it
redacted,
was.
Redacted, yeah.
They redacted this to send it to us as a fresh letter because they had, in the original version I saw, it had all that other stuff blanked out, and then this piece, and I asked them if they were willing to make this specific statement to give us the letter in the specific form, which this letter came from the letter specifically giving their advice to the board on the case, on the specific case.
I work with the American Physical Therapy Association, and I work with their legal counsel, and they're very surprised that Oregon is sort of behind the curve in recognizing the doctoral degree.
Thank you. Ms. Decker, welcome.
Thank you.
It's your first time in this committee?
Is it?
Second, maybe.
Maybe my second. Yeah.
We're supposed to harass you the first time a lobbyist shows up.
Okay. What's my second then?
Okay.
I'm certain of that.
Nice catch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Inga Decker with Tonkin Torp. I'm here this afternoon representing the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. As many of you probably know, OPTA is a not-for-profit organization that represents nearly 1,000 physical therapists, physical therapy assistants, and PT students. OPTA is supportive of House Bill 2610 for the reasons that we've heard discussed here today. This bill in standardizing when the title doctor can be used is, they believe, a public service benefit. It tells the general public and potential patients that a particular healthcare provider has completed successfully a doctoral program and is licensed to practice in that specific area in the state of Oregon. So it not only provides clarity for the public, but also, as we just heard from Ms. Godwin, also practitioners, providing clarity for them also when they can use the term and the title doctor and when they cannot. So I really don't have much more to add to the testimony that's already been stated with respect to physical therapists, but if anybody has any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Susan King? Anybody else here to testify on this bill? Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. Susan King representing the Oregon Nurses Association, and within our membership we have two categories of advanced practice nurses, nurse practitioners and clinical nurse specialists. I'm here today to ask you if the intent of this bill is as I'm reading it. Certainly we have no argument with clarity, and certainly we have no argument with consumer protection. We believe consumers should have a right to know the credentials and the preparation of those professionals providing their care. However, in looking at Section 1, which amends 676110, my reading of it, unless I'm misunderstanding, would suggest that a nurse practitioner, as identified by Representative Maurer, cannot use the word clinic unless that nurse practitioner has a doctoral degree.
I think we need to straighten that out. We need to make sure that that's not...
Okay. And then my second question, I would think that probably is the same answer. We have legally titled clinical nurse specialists. Again, this language as written would seem to preclude them using a legal title because many of them do not have a doctoral degree. So I'm just questioning.
Stop them from using what title?
Their title is clinical nurse specialist, and Section 1 says you may not use the word title specialist unless you've earned a doctoral degree. And I'm asking if that was the intent or whether that would be addressed in future amendments.
No, I'm sure that's not the intent.
Okay. Those would be our concerns with the bill as written.
The
wasn't my intent.
That may be true in current legislation, actually. That specialist, I think, came out of current legislation.
Yeah.
So it may be illegal now. Maybe we could help you a little bit and straighten that out.
Well, they've been practicing illegally for about 50 years then, so they might like to know that. But don't tell the Board of Nansen. Right, exactly.
Well, I mean, actually, the interesting thing about that is this is a relatively new independent practice. So, I mean,
but not a new practice with that title, right?
But it is relevant, I think, and we need to make sure we clean that out. And I think what it means is we need to amend that out of the old language, I mean, in this. We'll get on that immediately.
All right. Thank you very much, Chair Greenberg.
Somebody?
Senator Cannon? Well, I mean, this is, thank you, Mr. Chair, this is complicated. I think this is obvious to everybody, but by the fact there are these sort of cascading provisions of law that dig into, and Tom expressed this better than I, but dig into, I guess, the medical boards. No, it's not medical board statutes directly, but I wonder if there's a cleaner way to deal with it than what
eliminate
we have here, because actually this bill creates yet another cross-reference, so you go from one to another to another. It's a challenging way, I think, to deal with this issue. Maybe the best and only, but...
No, I think we may be able to clean this up. I think the intent is clear, and I don't think anybody has a problem with the intent. Is that right? Let's let anybody that has an earned doctorate and is licensed to practice use that doctorate, whatever that is, and there'll be...
Well,
I don't know what the next one's going to be. But not to stop other...
I wouldn't agree with that, because
okay.
I think a postdoc resident under supervision, it's an appropriate title.
Yeah.
But they are clearly under supervision. They must always identify themselves with their correct title.
Well, first
they are
we have
a
to
resident.
Find, first, we have to find out whether that's covered independently under the psychology.
And maybe that's how we do it,
and
as we provide an exemption here.
Maybe you can help us do that if
I'll
you would take a look at that piece. But and this may also give us the opportunity to clean up ambiguity in the existing law. And we'll try and do that and come back with nice, clean dash twos or whatever it is, or threes to do that. Any other business to come before the...
Mm-mm.
We are... Wait a minute. Close the public hearing. Remind you, Wednesday we'll get back to work on this, and for the vice chairs, we'll meet at, say, 4:45. Does that work?
Mm-hmm.
That work for you?
Did you guys say
work for you?
Sooner
the
better.
Or even sooner.
I missed it.
We're adjourned.
Does this mean we have to...